King Sodasa. Shapa, by the curse. Mohita, because of being condemned. Translation in purport by Srila Prabhupada. Being condemned by the curse of Ashishta, King Sodasa devoured the Brahmana exactly as a tiger eats its prey, even though the Brahmana's wife spoke so pitiably. Sodasa was unmoved by her lamentation. Purport. This is an example of destiny. King Sodasa was condemned by the curse of Ashishta, and therefore, even though he was well qualified, he could not restrain himself from being a tiger-like Rakshasa, for this was his destiny. Ta labhyate dukavad anyata sukam. Bhagavatam 1.5.18. As one is put into distress by destiny, destiny can also put one in a happy situation. Destiny is extremely strong, but one can change destiny if one comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. Ramasmita 5.54. Omagyana timirandasya janandana salakaya chakshunna tamina tasmai shi jirne namha. So here we're seeing an example of destiny. Here's this king who is cursed to be a Rakshasa. And although he was a very great king, he could not stop himself from eating other human beings. Here he's eating a Brahmana. And we know from a little bit of his past that was described here that this wasn't his actual nature. He was very kind to the Brahmanas. And yet, due to this curse and these circumstances, he's eating a Brahmana, although his wife is pitiably crying out, please, I will also die if you eat my husband. And but no pity was taken. He immediately ate him. So destiny, I think I've given a class on this once before, and looking at destiny, for a devotee, it's Krishna's arrangement. And actually, anything that happens in this material world is by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's said that not even a blade of grass moves without the sanction of the Lord. So we know that whatever happens, whether it's being, like for a devotee, it might be the Lord's direct hand, but for a non-devotee, it may be the interaction of the three modes of material nature. But all of this is under the direction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So there was one story about a king who was going out. He had his minister, and he was going out for hunting. But previous to that, he had cut his finger, and he was complaining about how bad it hurt that he had cut his finger. He cut the tip off. And his minister said, well, that's the arrangement of the Lord. And the king became so angry that he was not feeling sorry for him that he immediately said, throw him into the prison. He should stay there for a while until he learns, you know, that he should show some respect. I'm in pain. So he threw the minister into the prison and he went off hunting. So while he was out in the woods hunting, he was captured by some dacoits that were worshippers of Kali. And they wanted to offer him as a sacrifice. So they were bathing him and getting him all nicely prepared. And suddenly they noticed that he was missing a part of his finger. They said, we can't offer him. He's not even whole. He's missing a part. So they immediately threw him out and went to find someone else that would be suitable. So the king said, wow, that was really Krishna's mercy. He's right. The minister was right. If I hadn't lost that bit of finger, I would have been just sacrificed to Kali. So on his way home, he was thinking, I must make this up to the minister. I have to take him out of prison. He was feeling bad. And when he arrived home, he immediately said, release the minister and ask him to come to see me. So the minister was released and he came before the king. And the king said, you know, you're right. That was definitely Krishna's arrangement that I lost my finger. And he explained to him what had happened in the forest that day. Then he said, but there's one thing I cannot understand. If everything is Krishna's mercy and the arrangement of the Lord, why did you get put in prison? Why did the Lord have me put you into prison where you had to suffer for the whole day today? He said, ah, because if I would have been with you, I'm whole. And the dacoits would have immediately offered me to Kali. So because I was in prison, I didn't have that problem. So the king said, oh, now I understand. So in this way, even with ourselves, we can see in different times, and maybe at the exact time that it happens, we can't see how it's Krishna's mercy. Just like that king didn't understand how cutting his finger was Krishna's mercy. But later, looking back on situations, we can understand, oh yeah, that was Krishna's mercy. Somehow or other, even the worst thing that happens can be Krishna's mercy. So at the end of this purport, Srila Prabhupada explains that destiny is extremely strong, but one can change destiny if one comes to the platform of Krishna consciousness. And then he quotes a verse from the Brahma Samhita. Yastvindra gopa atavindra mahasva karma bandana rupa palabhajana matanoti karmani nirdahati kintu jabhakti bhajam govinda mari purusham tamaham bhajami. So this means, I adore the primeval Lord Govinda, who burns up to the roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion, and impartially ordains for each the due enjoyment of the fruits of one's work in accordance with the chain of their previously performed works. No less in the case of the tiny insect that bears the name of Indra Gopa than in that of Indra, king of the Devas. So Krishna, he gives to the devotees what they deserve, and he arranges for every living entity to get what they deserve, even down to the tiny insect, what to speak of the King of Heaven. So here, one thing that's jumped out to me was he burns up to the roots. So we know if we're growing something in a garden, if somehow or other it gets burnt, like if you put fresh cow dung on a garden, it burns right down to the roots. And that plant will die and not come back. So here it says that Govinda burns up to the roots all fruitive activities of those who are imbued with devotion. So I was thinking about how is that we can become imbued with devotion. And during japa this morning, it suddenly jumped out that the process of deity worship is very important to become imbued with devotion. And I was looking at the different things that were said in the folio about deity worship. And it's quite an amazing thing that through the Bhagavatam, like we know from the first canto to the ninth canto, is preparing us to hear Krishna's pastimes. So throughout the first, it's talking about different devotees and how they attain perfection, and then we get to Krishna's pastimes and all the beautiful pastimes in Vrindavan and Dwarka, and we start to know the Lord better and become attracted to the Lord. And then in the 11th canto, Krishna describes the process of deity worship. And I thought that was interesting, that after hearing about the Lord's pastimes, then suddenly Uddhava asks, Krishna, could you describe to us this process of deity worship, your form as the deity? And verses in that 11th canto, it's 11:27, 3 and 4. And the verse says, this is Uddhava speaking, O magnanimous Lord, the instructions on the process of deity worship first emanated from your lotus mouth. Then they were spoken by the great Lord Brahma to his sons, headed by Bhrigu, and by Lord Shiva to Parvati. This process is accepted by and appropriate for all occupational and spiritual orders of society. Therefore, I consider worship of you and your deity form to be the most beneficial of all spiritual practices, even for women and sudras. So, going through the different, I've probably only got to about 35 hits on deity worship. And there's like 1,700 and something different hits for that. But all throughout, Prabhupada keeps stressing that chanting and hearing is very important, and reading the books. But deity worship brings us to being a personalist, to understanding the Supreme Lord as a person. And in one purport, he even says that by seeing Krishna and serving him as a person, we'll no longer commit offenses. They will just go away. Because if you look at the offenses to the deity, it's really due to us not seeing him as a person. Krishna is standing there waiting for our service. And just like in the morning when we go in to dress the Lord, so we're undressing him. No one wants to undress in a public place. So the doors are closed and the deities are undressed, and you keep them warm. You don't undress them and just leave them standing there. You keep them warm. You use warm water for bathing them. Then you dry them off nicely. You put scented oil on. Even, you know, nowadays women, they'll spray perfume or, you know, to make themselves. So Krishna, he likes that smelling nice, that nice perfume. So we rub oil on the Lord's body. Then you put it on his nice clothing, and you decorate him with ornaments. And while you're doing this, you're chanting. You're chanting prayers during the bathing, the Brahma Samhita prayers. And they're all glorifying the Lord. At one point, Srila Prabhupada said, actually, the Supreme Lord, the deity form of the Lord, should be worshipped just like a king. So we know by reading about kings in the Bhagavatam and Mahabharata, they're first awoken with prayers, saying what great things they've done. And so similarly, we worship Krishna by glorifying him, telling, please rise now with your consort, Srimati Radharani. You know, your devotees are coming to see you. All different nice prayers are offered to the Lord. And then the devotees are here waiting, and when the curtain's open, he's offered nice sweets. Because, of course, everyone likes to eat something nice. And the Lord's offered nice milk sweets in the morning. And then the curtains open, and he can glance upon his devotees who have risen early and come here to glorify him and glorify his pure devotee. And he's still in his pajamas, so you get to see him. I mean, that's such a great thing to get to see Krishna in his pajamas. He doesn't have so many jewels on, and you can actually see his form very nicely. And then, again, the curtains are closed, and he's undressed and bathed, and different mantras and prayers are offered. And then his breakfast comes, and he eats his breakfast. Then again, the curtains are open, and he gets to see his devotees who have all assembled to see how nicely he's dressed. And throughout the day, he's offered prayers. All the devotees come, and they offer prayers to him. We sing the Govindam prayers, which Prabhupada instituted, at least the first three slokas. And then different devotees will offer prayers to the Lord, glorifying him. And then throughout the day, offerings are made, artiks are made, the Lord is put to rest, he's woken again, he gets an offering of fruit and sweets. Then another arti, the devotees come and sing for him. So he's worshipped just like a king would be worshipped. But this worship of the Supreme Lord like this, it makes us begin to see Krishna as a person rather than just a stone figure standing upon the altar. And once that starts happening, when we start, then our rounds can start being more personal. We can think of the Lord more personally, different things that he's done in the past, how he looks today in his threefold bending form of Shamsundar. How Krishna and Balaram are going out to the fields. Sometimes Balaram will have his plow for plowing. Prabhupada said, don't think that plow is just an ornament on Balaram. But he actually goes and plows the fields. And Krishna and Balaram have their ropes ready for the cows. Even Shyam has his rope for the cows. And we can remember different pastimes of the Lord. We can think, oh, the Lord looks so nice. I would like to make a garland for Krishna. Maybe I'll buy some nice flowers for the Lord so his garlands can look different. You know, we start thinking in a more personal way of the Lord. Without that deity worship, that isn't there. That doesn't come. We don't think of the Lord in a person, as a person. Only a very advanced devotee can think like that. And not only that, but Prabhupada keeps stressing that this is very important for neophyte devotees and for grihasthas. Because he says, without deity worship, grihasthas become very miserly. Everything is mine, mine, me, and mine. And it goes out a little bit maybe to our family, but it's still miserliness. But once the deity is being worshipped, we can then start using our funds, which should be used for the Lord in different ways. We can buy jewelry for the Lord. I know last time we were in Vrindavan, we went to Delhi to the old section, and there's all these really beautiful jewelry shops with gorgeous things. And you just want to buy. I just kept thinking, I wish I had more and more Lakshmi so I could buy more things. You know, there's so many beautiful, and then you can start thinking of the Lord, oh, this would look so nice on him, on his waist or on his chest. Oh, this would look so nice for Srimati Radharani on his ears. Is this too long, too short? You start thinking personally of the Lord. And this is the perfection of our wealth, is to serve Krishna. And also, the more you take shelter of the Lord, the more you start, when you have real difficulties and things just seem like they couldn't get any worse, immediately the Lord comes to your mind. And I've had the experience of having Krishna just when I'm in such distress that I can't think of anything except for, oh, poor me, or this is so bad. Suddenly the Lord appears, the deity form of the Lord appears in your mind, and it gives such relief. It's just like, oh, there's someone here that I can take shelter of, that's actually giving me protection, real protection, not just my insurance company or, you know, but Krishna gives the real protection. So it's very important to take the opportunity that we have to worship the deity. And you don't have to be second initiated to worship the Lord. Even just coming and singing for the Lord, dancing for the Lord, making garlands for the Lord, washing the Lord's plates after his meal, maybe helping cut up, bring things for the Lord to eat, something nice, you know, that you can offer, that the cooks can cook for the Lord. There's so many different services. So many. And I remembered that there was this, a long time ago, there was a magazine that came out for a few times called Archana. And in there was a nice article that was questions and answers. It was an interview by Krishna Kshetra Prabhu of Padmanabha Goswami from the Radharaman temple. And one of the questions that he asked him, he was asking him in general how they set up the deity worship of Radharamanji, how it went on, because like within ISKCON we have temples and devotees live in the temples and they do the deity worship, and you know there's a head pujari, and then but the Radharaman temple wasn't set up like that. So he was asking just about how it was run, and he explained that there's different families that take turns, and according to the, you get 2 months each, let's see. And there's 5 families. So during that time, the direct family worships the Lord, and they can ask different Goswamis to do different services, but they're in charge of making sure that everything's done. But then a bit later, Krishna Kshetra Prabhu asked him, you were mentioning this matter of householders taking up personal deities. Can you comment on that in relation to the temple worship and how personal worship can affect the temple worship? So Padmanabha Goswami said, "This is my personal opinion, personal suggestion, and personal request that devotees should be attracted and take care and responsibility for the main temple and for the main deity. Because Srila Prabhupada was establishing so many temples all over the world, so this is the duty of his disciples and devotees, that they have to nicely take care of those temples and those deities. If the devotees establish their own deities in their own houses, they will be busy in their own houses for their own deity worship. After some time, the main deity and the main temple will be neglected. If the householders catch the opportunity for this service in the temple, definitely they have to do service for this main deity. This is my suggestion also, that better they have to keep the photographs of the main deity in their house on the altar, and if they want to do their own worship in the morning, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, they can do their morning worship on that altar with those photographs." So I was thinking that you look around at our temples within ISKCON, and here it's going very nicely, but so many temples, there's one, two people doing all the deity worship there. And it's not of the standard that it was when Srila Prabhupada was personally present. And it seems that, you know, we do, it's just like even in our temples, farms, when we started selling different parts of the land and devotees got their own bit, and then we put all of our effort into our own bit, and then the rest of the farm kind of fades away. Nobody's taking care. So it's very important. Just like Radharaman Temple has been going since the Goswami's time. And the worship has been going on so nicely. Prabhupada showed us that this is the example of how deity worship should go on. And we think here in ISKCON, what the oldest deity worship is probably, 40-something years. And already so many temples are sliding in their deity worship and how they worship. And this is sad because we're losing the opportunity that Srila Prabhupada's given us to advance. There was one purport where Srila Prabhupada said, "The form of the Lord as worshipped in the temple is called Archa Vigraha or Archa Avatar. The worshipable form, the deity incarnation. This facility is offered to neophyte devotees so that they can see the real form of the Lord face to face, offer their respectful obeisances and sacrifices in the form of the archa. Through such facilities, the neophytes gradually invoke their original Krishna consciousness. Deity worship in the form of temple worship is the most valuable benediction given by the Lord to beginners. All neophytes must therefore engage in the worship of the Lord by keeping the Archa Vigraha in the temple or at home." And that's from Canto 4, Chapter 30, Text 27. So it's such an important thing, this deity worship, and we should all take shelter of it. There's a purport in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 9th canto, where Prahlad Maharaj is describing the 9 processes of devotional service. And Prabhupada goes at great length there, describing the offenses in the worship of the deity and different things. And he's promoting deity worship is so important. And even he's explaining how deity worship, Shravanam, Kirtam, everything is included in deity worship. There's chanting, there's hearing, there's remembering the Lord. So we can all take part in any way we can to worship the Supreme Lord and get the benefit. It will make us more and more personal. More and more we'll be anxious to serve the Lord. And then we can actually be qualified to go back to Godhead and worship the Supreme Lord in Goloka Vrindavan, where our real home is. At the end of the Brahma Samhita, there's a nice verse at the very end, well, the end of what we have, because obviously it's much more. where it said, Lord Brahma says, Shriya Kanta Kanta Paramaparusha Kalpataravo Druma Bhumis Chintamani Ganamai Toyamamritam Kata Ganam Natyam Gamanamapi Vamsi Priyasaki Chirananandam Jyoti Paramapi Tadasvadyamapicha Sayatra Shirabhi Sravati Surabhi Yasya Samaha Nimesradyakyo Vavrajati Yahya Trapi Samaha Vajat Sveta Dvipa Tamahamiha Galoka Itiyam Vidantas Te Santashiti Virala Charakati Paye. And he's describing how in Goloka Vrindavan, every step is a dance, every word is a song. The gopis are there serving Krishna. He's with his cows in the pasturing fields, and it's such a wonderful place that he's describing for us so that we have some hankering to get back there and enjoy with Krishna instead of being here in this material world, which isn't a fun place to be. So I'll stop there, and if there's any questions or comments, we'll do that now. Come.
I got the question generated earlier in the class, so it mentioned, I think, in the end of the verse, the purport, that even though destiny is very strong, it's controlling everyone, and I think you also mentioned the devotees, it mentioned by Krishna consciousness it could be changed. I was wondering if you could say a little bit that when something's happening in a devotee's life, sometimes you think, well, that's karma, or this is Krishna. Just how your destiny can get changed by Krishna consciousness.
Well, that was that verse that he quoted to go along with that, which was that when you're imbued with devotion, it's burned up to the roots, all your fruitive activities. But the thing is, Prabhupada explained how upon initiation, to initiate something means the beginning of something. So we're beginning the process of devotional service. That our karma, it's like unplugging the fan. And the fan slowly slows down. It doesn't immediately stop as soon as you unplug it. So we have some reactions still sitting there. But they're used by the Lord to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. And I know for myself, I've seen so many things that have happened that I think, oh my gosh, where did that come from? Why did that happen to me? You know, what did I do to deserve that? And it might be something that I cannot see at all, how that is going to make me more Krishna conscious. Like, you know, how my son going off and doing some crazy stuff. How is that going to make me more Krishna conscious? You know, it's just making me feel, oh. But when I look back and I see, actually, Krishna is so expert that he knows exactly each one of us and what we need for humility, for tolerance, to get all of those qualities of a devotee that we need to have to become pure enough that we can see Shyam Sundar in Goloka Vrindavan. And those things are hard to attain. So it might take some pinching, some prodding, some punching, some, you know, by Krishna. And we might be thinking, what did I do to deserve that? But Krishna is using these things to get to us. And, you know, we try to hide if there's a circumstance. Okay, Krishna's trying to make me humble. I'll just do this other thing, or I'll just go here. But sometimes Krishna knows exactly how to get you that you cannot get away. You can't get away. You have to learn that lesson at that point. You know, you might be able to avoid it here and there, but Krishna gets, he knew my son, I can't leave him. I have to have him here. He's part of, it's my duty to maintain and take care. And, you know, I have to be humble. I have to then realize that I'm not so great. What do they say? The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. You know, and then I also have to see other people in the same circumstance and not start saying, oh, that's just because they're such lousy devotees, that, you know, their kids like that, or, you know, they've been terrible parents and their kids. You know, Krishna teaches us so many things in one happening. And to someone else, they might look and say, oh, that's their karma for something or other. You know, but for the devotee, they see, thank you, Krishna. You're teaching me something that I could not learn any other way. And, you know, even though I might have to go through this distress to learn this lesson, it was worth a million times more distress to get that lesson. Because we know without humility especially, which is a hard thing to learn, but without that humility, we can't chant the holy names. We can't go back to Godhead without that. And this world is trying to make us exactly the opposite. It's there to make us proud, to make us egoistic, to make us think we are greater than everyone else. Everything in this world is there to make us think that. So how kind is Krishna to give us this jolt and this prod and pinch to help us to learn that, just get a little drop of humility, so that we can start chanting with some feeling and worshiping the Lord with some feeling. So that's our karma, but it's not really karma. It's actually Krishna using those things to help us advance in Krishna consciousness. At least that's my understanding. Any other questions, comments?
I can understand that first part, that Krishna needs to humble us and try to strip through our ego. Where I get stuck is accepting of that. I just want to rebel. Help me.
That's where our relationship with Krishna has to come in. You know, because we have to know, okay, this is awful, but I know Krishna has a plan, and I fully trust him. It's like when you're a child, you fully trust your parents. That you know that even if they're giving me a spanking or telling me no, or it's for my good. When you're a small child, you don't even consider whether they have your welfare in mind or not. You just, whatever they do for you, you know that they love you and they're doing it for your own good. So we have to see Krishna like that. Like out of the processes of devotional service, when we get down, I think it's the eighth process, and you become the Lord's friend. Oh no, it's the seventh. First you become the servant of the Lord. And then you become his friend. You see the Lord as your friend. That, you know, and a friend has always got your welfare at heart. You know, he's always going to look after you. So when something bad happens, we have to realize that, you know, I might not understand why this is happening. Just like a baby might not understand why his parents are taking him away from that fire that looks so beautiful that he'd like to touch. He doesn't understand. But it's for his welfare, and he'll understand later, but he accepts, okay, they're moving me to something else, to play somewhere else. So similarly, we have to accept, maybe at the time we don't understand why Krishna's doing something, but we have to have that feeling that there's some reason Krishna is doing this, that he has my welfare at heart. He's always looked after me. You know, he's always taking care of me. So somehow or other, this is for my welfare. And right now, I don't understand why. But I know it is, and I know I'll understand later. And you'll see, later you'll understand. Oh, gosh. If I would have done that, this would have happened. Or if I hadn't have gone through that, I would have never understood this. There's always some reason. But we have to have that faith. And I think that's where that verse that for one who just tolerates and worships me, then the kingdom of God or something is his rightful inheritance. Yeah. So that is that. You know, we just have to keep worshiping Krishna, keep chanting his name, keep serving him, keep thinking of him. And a friendship develops. We'll understand later why. Because it doesn't really matter why, in some ways, if we understand that Krishna's got our welfare at heart. We just have to be submissive. It's our, you know, rugged individualism, our American way. I do it my way. What is Frank Sinatra? I did it my way. You know, it's our way. But, you know, it's not our way. It's Krishna's way. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. You know, we've got to give up what we've been impressed with. Do it your way. You know, it's you're the boss. You're the only one that's important on this planet. You know, we have to stop thinking like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, when you're born and all the parents, oh, so cute, everything's given, you immediately start thinking, I am the center. I'm the center of the universe. You know, everything's coming to me. And it's very hard to break that, to realize we were reading, actually, the other day, Bhadra Priya and Nirmala and myself were reading Sudama Vipra. And in there, Prabhupada gave a really nice explanation of the three different, you know, the Kanishta Adhikari, the Madhyam Adhikari. He was saying that the Kanishta Adhikari bows his head down only to the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master. The Madhyam Adhikari suddenly realizes there's devotees also, and he bows his head down to devotees, the Supreme Lord and the spiritual master. And the topmost devotee bows his head down to everyone because he realizes every living entity is the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. And he feels himself the least of everyone. Everyone else is a devotee except for me. So we have to start seeing that we're just tiny part. Our world is not everything. Actually, Krishna's world should be everything to us. And we have to start getting that. And the best way to get that is by serving the Lord, by chanting and hearing and remembering and praying and deity worship. And all these things are there to help us start seeing Krishna as a person so that when things happen to us, okay, somehow this is happening. And I should have gotten a lot more. But he's minimized it, and he's using it for my advancement. And maybe right now I don't understand why or how this is helping me, but I know, I can rest assured that it is for my benefit that Krishna's doing this. It's a matter of just surrendering, just realizing I am not the controller. I am just a tiny little jiva, and I'm not even a good devotee. I'm just a tiny, insignificant speck. And, you know, like a mosquito, I'm just causing difficulty to the devotees and the Lord. But somehow, Krishna, if you could just let me make some advancement, and if it takes difficulties, so be it, you know. Then if I can learn something, so be it. It's well worth it. Problem?
There's another way of looking at those things that Krishna does send us to humble us. He saves us from so much of our karma. I realized that about 6 months ago, I was going home from the temple and going about 55 miles an hour on 235, and all of a sudden a deer ran out in front of me, and it was like time stopped. She was right in front of me, and she looked over, and I could see her eyes filled with fear, looking at me as I'm hurtling towards her, just death personified, and she somehow made it over to the other side. So she was saved, I was saved, you know. Mm-hmm. And I realized Krishna's saving us all the time from all kinds of calamities. He's protecting us from. That was just one that I saw, that I was aware of. And so the times that he asks us to surrender, there's so many that he's clearing away that we don't have to suffer. So it's another way of looking at it.
That's true. That's very true. But I've noticed for myself, I don't, maybe I'm a, what is that, a masochist? Is that the person who likes me? I've just noticed I make more progress, which isn't very much, but more in those times when I'm suffering like anything. You know, I'm suffering and I'm, at first I'm thinking, how can I get out of this? How can I change these things? And then it's not changing, and then I'm realizing I have to surrender to this. And then I start thinking, what is Krishna trying to teach me from this? And then I get humbled more to start understanding what Krishna is trying to teach. So, yeah, he does save us for so many things that we don't even realize. Just like that baby doesn't realize why the mother moved him from that fire. She saved him from burn. But when it does come, we do have to think, you know, this is for my benefit. Okay? Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.